Evolve 360, a holistic approach to life, is an exploration of learning through experience to transform individually and culturally as a whole by taking a 360-degree look at our quality of life, including the limiting beliefs, worn-out paradigms, and destructive habits that have led us to where we are today, and to instead create or revolutionize a new life vision that brings greater peace, appreciation, fulfillment, clarity, happiness, and joy as we ultimately evolve. So in our last two episodes, Shelley and I gave a historical count of the birth of our nation and a symbolic overview of the four survival archetypal patterns and introduced the remaining eight archetypal patterns that played a major role and had a profound effect in the creation of the United States of America. In this episode, we will explore the sins of America and how, since the birth of our nation, part of our sacred contract is bringing this shadow into the light, not just to transform our country, but also the world. So let's dive in. Welcome to the Evolve 360 Shelley Shell Show with host
Shelley Grace
and Shelley Divine. Hey, Soul Sister.
Hey, Soul Sister. So here we are, middle of July.
Yeah, we're back again.
We're back again, and we're still plugging away at our history of this country that we've decided to do a whole month long episode because it's so important. Now, our listeners out there might be saying, well, what does history need to do with my own personal life? Well, it's got to do a lot with it, and we're going to tell you why. We're going to touch more upon it in today's show. We're going to share a little bit of our own personal histories, and we're going to make that bridge so that you understand how we get affected by everything around us. We are energy. Everything around us is energy, and this is what our show is about, to get you to think and get you to see and get you to align yourself so that you live a holistic life. Mm-hmm. So, whoa, I'm telling you, it's been just a wonderful kind of season here preparing for this month, because we've done so much research with the history of our nation, the US of A.
Oh, yeah.
And Shelley, I mean, last time we talked so much about it, and today we're going to talk a little bit more. But before we do, let's set an intention. And we decided to start the show with a quote. Mm-hmm. And the quote from Dr. Martin Luther King, who he used from another gentleman that I'll tell you about in just a minute. But Dr. King said, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." Mm-hmm. What a beautiful quote. The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And I don't know about you, but I'm always thinking about, you know, ancestrally, how my family came to this country, how even my grandparents immigrated to, they came from Europe and they immigrated to Cuba during the Spanish War. That's where they ended up. And basically, let's face it, so many of us are immigrants. I know that the United States is based on immigration and that status and the old belief of the melting pot. Mm. And I know that now we've transitioned, because when I came to this country, it was basically to align yourself and become American. And, you know, luckily I never lost my language. I still speak Spanish fluently, but so many people did adapt. And I think it's important to keep your culture because you understand from where you are. And Shelley, you know, I know that your history is way back from, you're Irish, right?
Yeah, so I'm an American Irish mutt, I refer to myself as, because I'm a good mix. I have Irish and Scotch on my father's side, and then on my mother's, and they came from Ireland. Like, actually my grandparents didn't, it would be my great grandparents came over here, and Scottish heritage. Right. And then on my mom's side, we had French Canadian, Lithuanian, and I think What else? I think that might be it. French, Canadian, and Lithuanian. I thought there was another one. There was potential of some Native American Indian, but we never got that, like, kind of, nobody ever, like, we don't know if it's actually true or not, if we're just, you know, something right. said, you know, so right. we don't know. I got to take an ancestry, whatever, a DNA.
Exactly. I haven't done that either. Out. But yeah. I know that I have European roots, and then the other part of my family, which is from my mom's side, they have more like, they're more like Cuban. Yeah. My dad's side is more European. My mother's side is more Cuban. And if you saw my cousins, we don't look anything alike. And, you know, it's so important to understand the roots. And it's also important, because we talk about archetypes in every show, to understand our four core, which we're going to go deeper into today, which is your prostitute, your saboteur, your child, which is so, so important, mm-hmm. and the victim. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking about our ancestors and immigration, I know my grandpa, he was, I want to tell you a story, because my, you know, you have your lineage and then you have your DNA lineage, mm-hmm. but my grandpa was a very accomplished man in Cuba. He was a judge, and he ended up, you know, having properties and even coming into the States and having businesses here.
Oh.
But what was really interesting, and I want to share this story, because you never know what your history is, your lineage is, and what happens along the way with that pain and that sin that is committed, mm-hmm. and that affects the family on a deeper level. And a lot of times it's things that you don't even say, but it permeates. It's like that odor that just permeates an area of your life forever until you either deal with it and just, you know, process it and move on. So my grandpa, he, which I didn't know until like 15 years ago when my mother found out. Of course, my mother is like a lot older, you know, I'm in my mid-30s at this time, you know, a little older. And we found out that my grandfather had a whole nother family. And that was something that was exactly, it was really shocking to my mom. She learned about it when she was an adult, and she was the kind of woman that she taught me a lot, but she taught me how to deal with certain situations, and you face them as scarier as not nice as they should be. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we need to face them so that we can process them, because the worst thing that you can do is to repress it and push it in. Mm-hmm. So what happened, and this story is like crazy, you know, it's like the universe sometimes wants truth to come out in justice, yeah. and create situations in life where things just happen effortlessly. Mm-hmm. So my grandfather comes to New York City, and I guess it was back in like 19, my mother was born in the 20s. So let's say it was like 1940. Wow. So he's over here in New York, and he's doing some businesses, what have you. And we didn't know, because my grandfather lived, my parents moved to Havana. My grandparents moved to Havana, mm-hmm. when my mother was a teenager, but he stayed behind in another province that was, you know, very far away in Cuba. And he stayed behind because he was a judge in that province. A province is like a country, let's say. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know, but because he had another family. Now, mind you, my mother is one of nine. All right. So like, you know,
that's so a lot of kids.
Tell me about it. Right?
One. Oh my God.
One of nine. Wow. So he comes to New York, and he's writing letters to his wife, you know, dear, you know, wife, I love you. I miss you. I hope all the kids are fine. And you know, my mother had a nice life in Cuba. Wow. So, and then he also writes a letter to his significant other, his, I guess, committed wife, I, you know, because they had a child too. So I don't know what you call that, but his other family. Mm-hmm. So he's like, hey, you know, same thing, you know, hope you're fine. Hope the kid, you know, fine, blah, blah, blah. He mails the letter, but guess what happens? In his haste, he switched the letter. The letter for his wife went to his significant other. The letter for the significant other went to his wife. So lo and behold, what happens? Kaboom!
Wow.
The truth comes out. Now, my grandmother died, and this is really important, because we want to deal with issues such as these and help you guys understand that if even if it's ancestral, it comes up. And I know that our esteemed teacher that we love, Carolyn Meese, always says, your biography becomes your biology. So my grandmother, she was a saint. She never drank. She died of cirrhosis of the liver, which is basically you would get if you were an alcoholic.
Yeah.
But it was because of anger.
Anger.
Anger. And, you know, lo and behold, that's the story. I don't know about, you know, that side of my family because since I came to this country as a little girl, my mother found out later and, you know, she processed it with her sisters and, you know, they dealt with it on that matter. But it really, it didn't affect me, I guess, on this level, but it affects you in a DNA and an ancestral level, which we're going to, you know, unravel more as our show gets deeper. And I guess it's a great segue as to why we decided to do the show today on the sins of America, because it's a sin. And if you don't deal with sins, they become worse. And, you know, there's anger and it's repressed anger. And
it shows up in everything, cell tissue, in everything that is basically happening, even externally too, around.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why we wanted to share the show, because it deals with not only the world, our country, but also ourselves. So Shelly's been doing research. I've been doing research. And boy, Shelly, take it away. I have a million questions for you, because the viewers need to hear everything that we've been doing to just bring it on a more deeper level into our lives.
Yeah, well, I think that was a great segue of your personal story. I'm like, wow.
I know, right?
What a, that's so mind-blowing that, for one, you have a judge in your family history,
right,
which is one of the archetypal forces in this country that, you know, on the micro as well as the macro. So your grandfather?
My grandfather on my mother's side.
Right. Very well educated and obviously versed in law, which is interesting, because the sins of America, it doesn't matter, you know, how educated or non-educated you are. It seems like the sins of America, even the well-versed, educated person was very capable of manipulating laws and using things in the shadow. So in today's episode, we are going to speak about the sins of America. And these started, these are in our DNA. They're in our history. They're in the human experience. So it's not anything that our country, you know, started. It was already in existence. The great thing, the contract of our country is to liberate and to free individuals and the soul of an individual, as well as the country's soul. Right. And that's the great thing. And that's the reason why we're talking about this, because freedom has to be managed. And we have to know the light and the shadow side of both the archetypal forces that helped to create our nation and bring us from the earliest beginnings to now where we are today, and dealing with the same issues, only in a different way. We've come a long way, but we need to do more. We need to do more as human beings. And the best way to do that is to educate ourselves on the history, which I don't know about you, Shel, but when I was a kid in school, there's a lot of things that I didn't learn about, say, the African American and slavery, and then the Native American and how they were treated. We learned some stuff, but basically, you know, every year from, you know, the first, you know, 6 years of school and then into high school, I think at the end of we got the Revolutionary War.
Right.
Very little on the Civil War. That didn't happen until high school, maybe 10th grade or something. Right. And then maybe a little bit into World War I and World War II. We never even got into Vietnam and the Cold War or anything like that. Really, that probably happened if you went on to college or something. But still, you might not even get that history. And you weren't getting what is available to us today.
No, you know, and I'm glad you bring that up, because I'm a former school principal, and you're absolutely right. And I don't know how the curriculum is, you know, I know it's all state mandated and they have all these experts, but you're right. Kids should be taught more. Mm. And I know a lot of our school board members passed laws to have our teachers teach certain things. Like I know that we have, you know, the Black History curriculum at in, you know, Miami-Dade County, which is where I'm at. But you're absolutely right. It should be integrated and there should be more done, because I know myself, when I was researching with you, I learned so much that I didn't know before. And you're right. Today we have so much information at just, you know, at our fingertips where before. But I do agree that we need to teach our kids our history, and it has to be deeper than what it's being done right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things that we have both been trying to get across through the whole series of this podcast, this show, is to get you to think. But in today's and moving forward, it's not only mm-hmm. that, I want you to start to feel mm-hmm. and start to feel what it would be like to have lived or been oppressed in the way that some of these things have occurred from the very earliest beginnings to today, and to bring it into today and say, hey, wait a minute, because it's the only way. If we understand these emotions and understand them from an empathetic perspective, but detach, we have to detach from that too. It's important to detach and know what is the difference between what is ours, our own emotions, as well as what is someone else's, or what is collectively, because right now we have a collective emotion, which Shelley did touch upon initially with the whole wrath thing and being angry. And being angry right now in today's world, globally, as well as in this country, there is a lot of anger, and there's anger towards our government. And today we're going to go into possibly the reasons why, which are the sins of this country, which are predominantly slavery and then the theft of land towards the Native American Indian. Right. We're not going to get so much into the whole theft thing, because it started beforehand and then it came in. I know a little bit about it. I got more into the slavery because that is more current, what is happening, it's actually happening, not slavery, but the repercussions.
Just the right. Exactly.
Yeah, the repercussions and I think of that are hitting us now.
Right. And it's like a pressure cooker. You know, you have all this anger and it's repressed and then it just blows up. And we're at that point where it's blown up because we need to fix a lot of things.
Yeah.
And things have to change. And, you know, we just wanted to share kind of what we researched, because it was riveting. That's the word of the day.
Yeah, totally riveting.
Riveting.
Like, you find one thread and then you're on to another thread and you're like, oh, I didn't know that about that president or that founding father. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what these guys had to deal with. They were not perfect men. All right. They were men of their times. They had issues to deal with, just like we do today. Only they were trying to strive for something higher, not just for themselves, but for all humanity, even though they didn't live by it themselves.
Which isn't that interesting?
It's so fascinating to me. And one of the things that we, I'm going to bring in one of the core archetypes, the universal archetypes, is the victim and the victimizer. Now, back in the day when our country was being birthed, the victimizer, we as a nation, as political leaders, as the people who were starting this, were also victimizers. They were victimizing slaves. There was this big thing between the North and the South, but the Northerners still benefited from slave trade, and they had slaves themselves. Even some of our founding fathers had slaves. And some of our founding fathers too burnt Indian reservations. You know, some of our famous ones went in and ordered, like, you know, the burning of tribal nations and then moving Indians and Native American Indians off their lands.
Right.
And it's so disturbing. And when you see, you know, currently now people tearing down monuments, I was like, well, I can see why they do it. When you look at what happened and how this created. But that aside, to keep this vision of what this country was written about in the Constitution, freedom, liberty, for and equality for all human beings, you have to look at humanity as a whole and say, wait a minute, we've always been predators. We've always, I mean, England invaded other countries. There was always battling going on in
Europe. It's all about the power, and we always go back to
the power and the land.
One common denominator, the power.
Yeah, and taking over land and everything, and it's just
right. It's all about power.
It's you know, and then yeah, it's like nuts. And so we've always been that. And then when we came to this country, how did we, you know, rationalize? Now this is the thing that's really even like more so disturbing is like being complete hypocrites is we rationalized our behavior towards having and owning a slave or for taking or thieving land and pushing American Indians off of their land just because they didn't purchase it or buy it. They were here by right. You know, and because they were tribes and they might have, you know, traveled here and there, you know, went to some places in the spring, some places in the summer or whatever, doesn't mean that you give up that territory. I mean, today, you know, we have homes in the Hamptons or homes in, you know, winter homes in Florida and this, you know, summer homes up here in New England. So it's like, what's the difference?
Well, I think that we nailed it last time because they left that monarchy, that King George, to come and settle a new land. And then what happened after the revolution, they were being taxed. Those poor farmers that fought, they never got paid. They were being taxed.
Yeah.
So history sometimes repeats itself. You know, you want to start all over again and you have this new ideal and things don't work out that way because sometimes the power takes over people.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to always take a step back and see, you know, what's in the good for everyone, not only for one person.
Yeah.
Because it's important. And what's very interesting was when they were putting together the Declaration of Independence, they left out some verbiage because King George wanted it to be left out. It's very interesting how King George still had his hand here.
Oh yeah. And it kind of miffed actually some of the founding fathers because George Washington kind of was, I can't remember exactly what it was, but he was back and forth with, now this is after our country had been developed. It's probably like, I don't know,
1783 or something,
83,
right?
Or even maybe in the 90s. And he's back and forth, you know, talking with good old King George.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the colonists didn't like it because France actually helped us.
Right.
You know, and help finance us. So they're thinking, what are you doing talking to him? He's like, you know, you're kind of like, and it kind of miffed some of these other founding fathers. And it almost, because I guess there was a war going on between England and France, but it almost, France was kind of getting a little miffed too with us because you guys owe us money.
Right. And we were in debt because Lafayette came over here with his troops and with his bags of gold. And and then all of a sudden, which is another thing, we've been in debt all our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's all about the money, baby. It's all about survival and the money and what you'll sell. That's the process.
And that it all goes back to power.
Yeah. Yeah.
A five letter word.
Yeah. So, So anyways, you know, we almost get into a war again with France, you know, and we don't want that. And that brings us all the way up to, I think it's like close to the Civil War, like, you know, prior to that, we're struggling as a nation to stay alive, basically. And, you know, we're trying to pay off debt. The way we pay off debt is, you have slave labor in the South. Cotton was huge, and tobacco, and I don't need sugar cane, and I mean, I don't know what else, but like we're using that, you know, to to do trade in other countries. I think there was even some woods, certain woods that were really big that they wanted over in Europe. And that we had here on this, you know, our natural resources here, they wanted over in Europe, of course. And so it helped to keep things alive and an economy alive in this country. But we still had issues with how we did our foreign policy. And so that was, you know, kind of, you know, a lot of people here didn't agree. I think there was the, you know, the Republican Party started. They were totally against, very often against slavery. Democrats actually were for it, which I was actually surprised.
Right. No, I know.
I would have, yeah, I was like, what? That totally threw me.
I know, right? That's why you have to go back to the history to see where we are today.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just unraveled. It's very interesting how things just take a turn and a toll, and people forget, because now we're in today's world, but way back when, like in the 1800s, things were very different.
Yeah.
Things were very different. And throwing a little bit more of flame into the fire, what about women? Because I know we're going to be talking more about women. And all these women that were pioneers, which is another archetype, behind the scenes, helping their husbands. And it was, that word comes up again, riveting.
Yeah.
What Abigail.
Oh, Abigail Adams.
Said to her husband, because she was a suffragette. She was
powerhouse. Yeah. When they actually were ratifying the Constitution for the second time, you know, this was after, you know, all those rebellions, because the whole tax issue. She had said to her husband, John Adams, remember the ladies when you rewrite that. And then she went on to say, and this was in a letter, I guess, to him, it went on to say something to the effect, because you know, men can be tyrants. Now, her word was his, this is what I got from literature, is that, you know, even though she wrote that, she still wasn't even viewed by him as any sort of authoritative.
Right.
Kind of, you know, he just kind of looked, you know, would kind of like, okay, honey. But he did say in some letter or something that, I really need your advice on this. You're my, you know, like, so
then
on the flip coin, he's like, you're my advisor for all.
Right.
I need to talk this through with you. So one of the things too is where, you know, I had mentioned it's really important to feel. Right. Now, when we always talk, I mean, we've heard the founding fathers, there were founding mothers, but they played a different role. And I just want to go back and reiterate is, you know, through all this education, these men were high powered, educated men. They went to like, say, Boston Latin School, and they went on to Harvard. They got seriously educated, our founding fathers. And that was a big thing back then. And, they went on from there to, you know, either become lawyers or
politicians
or merchants,
right?
And anything that they, you know, and they wanted to give back, which is really a, you know, a great thing. Women weren't allowed to do that, and Abigail Adams was big for education, for women to be educated, and she felt that it was really important for women because they were raising the children,
right?
That they had to educate their sons, so that they could be statesmen and important statesmen, or important in, you know, as they grew older, that they would have a significant role in the community and serving the community as a whole. So that was a bit of an enlightened view for women. And she really kind of, you know, spoke to that. And you know, wanted more women to be educated, and those equal rights for women to you know, come into play.
No, totally.
Which is, you know, it's interesting to me, but we often talk about the founding fathers and we don't appreciate the mother's role,
right?
And the mother archetype.
Right.
You know, because it's often you have the male mind, which is very rational and logical, and you look at education, it's like, okay, these are, you know, documented, it's written right. down. Where on the feminine side or the mother side, we have the father and the mother, is you have this dynamic of this sometimes irrational or something that you can't put your finger on. It's an intuitive, a creative kind of,
it's an essence.
Right. And that wasn't valued. And it's still somewhat isn't today in the American culture.
Well, it's getting there, but boy, have we had to fight as women to get where we are.
And then the
women's right to vote. Oh my gosh.
The cycles that the women have taken
right.
of their own demise and saboteur coming in, sabotaging themselves with this whole beauty thing.
And prostituting and themselves, right? Thing. Not in the literal sense of the word, but just,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah,
I could just see Abigail Adams telling her husband, I'm not cooking dinner tonight.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
Stomping her foot down and saying, you're going to listen to me, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Or like today, it's being youthful, you know, this whole kind of right. thing of being, you know, youthful. But let's swing it back to, okay, so we had the founding mothers who, and she was very against slavery.
Right.
Very much against it, which is, you know, New England was, but there was still so many people up here that had slaves and benefited from the work that slaves did. And it wasn't until there was several, I guess the 1800s,
right.
what had happened too with Black people, they started to have a little bit, like say if a plantation owner owned them or whatever, they might have time off. And so
they started their own.
So that when they had the time off, they were maybe educating themselves a little bit.
Right.
They might have been looking at scripture, and then they weren't supposed to get married, but they might have had some sort of ceremony where they got married, because oftentimes their family members would have been separated. Like, you know,
oh, that's horrible.
You could have had a kid, and then they get to a certain age, and then they're taken and sold to some other slave owner.
That's horrendous.
I can't even. And then the DNA and the hereditary of that
right.
comes up, you know, 200 years later, it's still, that wound is still in the DNA of the people that are.
Well, it comes up as illnesses, and it comes up as.
Absolutely.
Ailments. Like I was talking about my grandmother, and she died of cirrhosis of the liver.
Yeah.
It was anger.
And anger is such a big thing.
You just repressed anger. And how does that show up in your body?
Goes right
so
to
it's,
the liver.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's just so important. But there was so many women. I know one of the women that really helped the underground movement of the Underground Railroad was Harriet Tubman.
Oh,
and she was, you know, some of these women are just, wow, the courage that they had.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The courage that they had. I can only begin to imagine what it was like to live.
She was in 1913. I mean, she was
right.
much later on. But, mm-hmm. But she, you know, struck a massive blow in the name of equality. She was born a slave.
Right.
And then she escaped Philadelphia at the age of 29 years old, and then proceeded to help many others do the same by this Underground Railroad.
Right.
Somehow, I don't know where up in the North where that ended. I have no idea. Do you know?
Right. No, I really don't.
I don't either. But during her lifetime, she was also, can you imagine, this woman, this Black woman, is a Civil War spy and scout. So how old was she? I mean, the Civil War was in 1860 something, right? So I mean, right. and then she lived to, I don't know, like 1930.
She must have been a teenager when she was the Civil War scout. And then she decided that she was gonna do something.
Yeah.
And it only takes the power of one person to make a difference, to make a move.
Yeah.
You know, and she did. She helped so many people. There's so many people in this world that have taken a stand.
Well, that that rebel archetype showed up in her, boy, I'll tell you.
Right.
You know, she wasn't having it. She's like, I'm getting myself free, man, and I am doing something about it.
Exactly.
You know,
and helping others, which is very, I mean, it's just very, it's something that it takes a very special person to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm sure she risked her life every second of the day because of what she was doing.
Yeah.
But it's just incredible how, just like Shelley, you're saying, you know, the thread of history and how it, you know, how we are today and how COVID has put a pause on everything we've done so that we can have time to look, to reflect, and to see what we're going to do differently, because that's what, you know, Shelley and I have committed to making you guys think. And, you know, how are you going to, and I'm totally against, like, you know, I don't like protesting. I don't like wars. And, you know, I go about doing things in a different way, but we, as one person, it's the power of one. You have so much power. You know, I'm always about who's in office, and, you know, I don't want to talk politics, but it's so important to not be complacent and to get out there and make a difference.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. Because I know, you know, when you look at some of this history and you look at what's currently going today, it's very frustrating because you wonder, how can I be the change in the world?
Right.
You know, like, how can I be, you know, and it does happen on an individual level,
right,
and how you interact with people on a daily, you know, whatever your interactions are when you go into the workplace, or you're at home, even in your own family environment, everything counts.
Everything does count.
It does
count. Like a ripple effect in the pond.
Yeah.
But But I'm telling you.
Yeah, some of that history too. One, you know, there was another woman, I got to actually, her last name was Walker, and it's in my notes. And this one, this is fascinating. She used She used the legal system back. This is like in 1781. So shortly after our country became independent,
right?
Okay, she sued the state of Massachusetts. It's Elizabeth Freeman.
Elizabeth Freeman.
The state of Massachusetts for her freedom. And I guess apparently what had happened is she was, I don't know, I think she was beaten by her master or something like that. Horribly beaten. And couldn't work anymore, and then brought charges against him.
Good for her.
And then this is when Massachusetts finally said, hell no, you know, to slavery, which,
good.
I mean, I was blown away by this. And there was another guy too. He was, what's his name?
Was he a Supreme Court justice?
That guy was the guy that actually put into Massachusetts and said, okay, there's no
he
more
put
slavery.
In the law.
Yeah,
right.
Put in the law. Yeah. But no, Quack Walker in 1783.
What happened?
He was promised by his I guess master, slave master, that he would free him, and he never did. And then he beat him again.
Oh God.
And he ended up pressing charges.
Good.
And then it was this whole thing, what came into play is how did it go? Like, William Cushing, the judge. Now see, we've had some good judges and some bad judges.
Right.
And this guy, William Cushing in Massachusetts, was a chief justice of the Supreme Judicial Court in Massachusetts here. And he was like, you know, after looking at the Declaration of Independence and everything, and then they ratified the Massachusetts Constitution or whatever.
Right.
He said, all men are born free and equal and have certain natural, essential, and unalienable rights, among which may be reckoned the right of enjoying and defending their lives and liberties, that of acquiring, possessing, and protecting property, in fine, that of seeking and obtaining their safety and happiness. So, I mean, I can see why some of these other, you know, women, these abolitionist women and these other people, you know, later on down the road were trying to bring slaves up to the North. But slavery was still like, you know,
even
well
after
alive.
The Civil War, huh?
And yeah, like in like, you know, say Rhode Island and probably in New York and maybe even in New Hampshire. I don't even know. But I know up in Maine, there was this story. My daughter sent me this, which I never thought like slavery would be up in Maine. But what had happened is there's an island off the coast of Maine. I forgot the name of the island. And there was a lot of black people that had gone there after, like, you know, after slavery.
Civil War. Okay.
Civil War or something. And they inhabited the island and they created their own community there. And they were doing really well.
Okay.
They were doing really well, minding their own P's and Q's. They're on an island. But then Maine wanted, you know,
they wanted money.
Tourist attractions. No, tourist attractions. And stuff like, because of the coastline up there, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So they were trying to draw attention. And this is probably like, you know, turn of the century, 19th century. This is what happened. And apparently they saw like people who were on boats and stuff, they would see like, mm-hmm. kids along the shore that were all black, you
right.
know, and they're like, what's going on over there? So they would comment about it. And then it was like kind of, you know, a curiosity thing, you know, people come up and see that. But then the state of Maine didn't like that because they didn't want to, you know, the whole like poo, poo, poo. We don't
You're
want
kidding.
Like, we don't want like that kind of trash.
You're kidding.
No, it's like that. And
1913,
something around that time, turn of the century. So, wow. So what had happened was, I just can't believe it. They ended up getting some sort of court order. This is like the nasty judge, the shadow judge coming out. And they institutionalized all the people, the black people that would not leave that
You're
island.
You're kidding me.
They come up with all this kind of stuff, right? Finally, back in,
oh my
I don't
know, God,
it was horrible. I'll have to look it up even more. I read it real like quick, but I was like, God. Oh my word, this is awful. And the thing that got me about it was, I think later on, to the descendants of the people that lived on that island, mm-hmm. Maine wrote a formal apology. But meanwhile. Now
yeah,
they
I mean,
have, meanwhile, this is it. It's like now that island is owned still by the state. This is how like our country steals land. It's not just from the American people. It stole land from, you know.
The Indians. And
right. Yeah, these black people, I guess, couldn't prove that they had like the rights to that
like
land.
The deeds are right.
The deeds
exactly.
or something. And back in those days, who had that stuff, really?
Yeah.
And so... They apologized formally, and then they created this historical national kind of park that you can go and visit, which I'm thinking, does the state, you know, get money from that, or do they give back? Do they give back to any sort of thing?
That's very interesting, but that's
I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that, but an apology to me would not be enough if the state is in turn making money off of that venture, say.
But that's horrible. Where are those people's rights? It's terrible.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
Yeah, it was the bad judge, you know, like coming in and saying, okay, we're going to make this benefit us, you know?
Right.
And I just thought that was just, and that was, you know, that was how many years probably after the Civil War that this still is going on and mm-hmm. people's rights are being abused, completely
right.
abused, you know,
right.
these survival you know, like these people, where were they going to go? You're telling them to, they had homes on there that were,
wow.
that were like, you know, equivalent of probably like a, you know, a Cape style home or something.
Oh, beautiful.
And yeah. And they were like, oh, they, you know, they poo-pooed it. And I'm like, wow, just because of color, just because
yeah.
of color. If it had been white people there, they might not have even done anything. You know what I mean? Which is fascinating to me. I'm like, oh my word.
But that's anyway. The way it is because see, yeah. here's what you think. All
yeah.
right. You think you pass laws, mm. you think things are done, but there's people still, which I call like in the underground,
yeah.
that decide to have their own rules and their own laws. and totally go against what I would say the universal cosmic law is, which is live and let live.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know,
for their own aggrandizement,
their entitlement, their own benefit, their power, their money,
entitled.
And let me tell you, it's a great segue to what we talked about, which is the seven deadly sins.
Oh, yes.
The seven deadly sins.
Yeah. That's one of the things too, which, you know, back in the day when the Constitution was written, it took, say, God out of the government.
Right.
But it was still allowed. You had the right to, you know, express yourself freely with whatever, you know, beliefs that you had, you know, spiritual beliefs, I guess.
Right.
Those are ways that you teach, you know, our favorite word, discernment. You teach children, you know, the virtues. And if we're not learning those in school anymore.
Right. You're not.
You're not.
The way that you and I went to school is not what's being taught today. And I really have a problem with education.
Yeah.
You know, that I can speak ad nauseum about it.
Yeah.
And maybe one day I'll do something to make an even bigger difference. But, you know, virtues are so important. Having God.
Yeah.
I know not a lot of people, some people believe in it, some people don't, but you need to have children believe in something, because I saw it with my own eyes. When you don't have a belief in something, it's not good. When you don't have a virtue, it's not good.
Yeah.
It creates a problem, and you're forming children, you're forming minds.
Yes.
And it's so important. So important.
Well, kids have to know right from wrong. And if we are living in a society where lying is what's right or what's done just because, which it is now, right? And I mean, we see it, you know, as we're watching the news, everybody knows that was a bold-faced lie just then. And we do nothing about it. I mean, maybe we can vote a person out or whatever, but it's like,
well, I really have a problem too with how the media, I remember when we talked about this the other day, the news, I used to love to watch the news. It was diverse. And now I hate watching the news because it's so one-sided and it's so skewed. And you know, there comes a point where's the humanity in the news?
Yeah.
Right. Where's the humanity?
Yeah.
I mean, I watch what I need to watch, certain channels, just to you know, be living in the world kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But it's just grandiose, man. It's just, it's not pure.
Yeah.
It's not pure at all. And I don't think anybody is doing it in a pure way.
Yeah.
It's about sensationalism.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, when we look at the seven deadly sins, never mind, like, say, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill, or, you know, that thou shalt not, you know, whatever, you know. But I mean, greed. Greed. We're so, like, we're just with the COVID thing.
We're like, soaking in greed, right?
We're like, okay, I don't have my stuff, or I don't have whatever I can do. I can't travel now, or I can't go on vacation and spend some time at a hotel or whatever. I can't go here or there. I can't go out to dinner without having a mask on or something. And some people are having a conniption over this. And I'm like, well, you know what? It's about being respectful to someone else.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's like, what is wrong with doing that? Why does it have to be all about, you know, the self?
Entitlement. And the interesting thing about this COVID is that it attacks anybody.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you have money. It doesn't matter what ethnicity you are, what color of your skin you are. You know, it attacks.
Yeah, everyone.
It's, you know, people feel that they're entitled, that they're not going to get it, that they're beneath it. Mm-hmm. And you can't think that way. We're all one. We're all in this together. Yeah. Anybody can get it.
Yeah.
And you just have to be careful. You really have to be careful. And, you know, one of the things that I did want to share is that I remember Anthony Fauci and Burke having a press conference, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago, on the different populations. And I know that you know, you have the Black Americans, you have the Hispanics, and you have the whites, and they're always comparing the demographics and how COVID was hitting the different things. But getting back to the anger and the sins of America, and this is, you know, research-based, the Black population was getting hit with more COVID than any other population. I don't know, because I haven't seen the numbers yet.
Yeah,
that is still holding true. But it might go back to the fact that what we discussed about, you know, all this anger that's been repressed.
Sure.
And now it just shows up in a different way in your body.
Yeah. And they may be more vulnerable because they've been dealing with all this unprocessed.
Right. Anger.
Rage and anger.
Right.
Yeah.
Rage is the word. Right.
Yeah. Rage. And I mean, it gets into your DNA. Being oppressed. I mean, the whole slavery thing was about dominating another human being and oppressing another human being, and how slaveholders would do that. You know, after there was a bunch of uprisings, you know, getting back to the history a little bit, there was a bunch of uprisings, say, you know, in the 1800s, the early 1800s. And there was several of them, you know, maybe every, you know, 7 years, there'd be another one, or 10 years, there would be another
right.
one. It's all led up into the Civil War. But there was one in particular, Nat Turner's Rebellion.
Right.
And I guess apparently this was in Virginia, you know, George Washington's home area, I guess.
Mount Vernon, right?
Well, I don't know if it happened in Mount Vernon, but someplace in Virginia. And he basically, they went across the countryside. And what's horrible is what these men did, you know, the rebel coming out was them killing the women and the children, white women and children in their homes.
Wow.
While the white men were at a meeting of some kind.
And right.
So this was a big notorious kind of thing. And what had happened after that is, because this rebellion happened, well, any of these rights that the slaves were, or these, not rights, but the slaves, while they were owned by the plantation owners or whatever.
Right.
You know, like any of the things that they got to do, like got to meet or have like some time off,
church
church or education, was now like poo, you know, like
taken away. But
and
why?
Because
of what happened.
Because there was more uprising and black people were saying, we don't want this. We want some equality. We don't want to
right.
be slaves anymore.
Right.
And so what had happened after that, then all the plantation owners started to crack down. And so some of the you know, horrible acts towards black people happened in a shorter period of time, but were like more dominance, more oppression, more
beatings,
more separating families. Like
if you
were like married to somebody, your husband could have been taken away, or your wife could have been taken away, your kids separated from you, and they just split. They just treated them even more inhumanely.
Wow.
So there was all this like horrible stuff going on, and it got out of control. It got even more so out of control. It's so disturbing when you read it, you know, and there's so many places now that you can find information on it, and there's so many stories and stuff.
So we've done a vast research.
But we're not even touching on how...
And the History Channel has a lot of really good pieces of historical information. And they have some really good historical movies on some of this that Shelley and I are talking about.
Yeah, and it's totally worth informing yourself about to understand what's currently happening today.
Right.
And to say, hey, wait a minute, and to actually really feel what is, because as a white person, you don't know. You just don't know. You don't, I mean, like the only thing I think women would have a better understanding of it. I don't think white men typically would, unless they've had a different upbringing than what was probably, but I think white women could understand it in one thread of being threatened all the time would be like, you know, if you walk down a dark alley and right. you were kind of afraid for your, you know, being raped or something, that I think you could empathetically identify with whatever it is a black person today might be experiencing when they are looking at, you know, fear all the time, feeling fearful all the time.
That's horrible. Or not being accepted, because I know that I got a whiff of that being Hispanic. At times, you know, you go around life thinking that everything's hunky-dory and then you realize that you're not accepted because, you know, you're Hispanic. And I know that I had this conversation with my husband the other day because we didn't grow up in Miami. We grew up north.
Yeah.
And even though I believe that the northern part of the United States is freer. I've always seen it more open-minded towards all races, all, you know, different religions or even different cultures. But even then it permeates that oppression permeates that you just, you know, you're not included.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're called names and it just, you know, you just kind of try and stay away from people like that but it's there. So I can't even begin to imagine, because I experienced some of it, what it would be like.
Wow.
But we need to move forward with this world in a better way for equality for everybody.
Yeah.
And in a positive way. Yeah. I don't know what that's going to look like. I definitely don't have the answer. I really don't. But we want to get people to think.
Yeah.
And
now start to feel these emotions. It's both. It's like to use both your mind and your heart together and to kind of, you know, start to bring that in and empathize with what, and I think
have compassion.
And with this COVID thing, we're being called to do that.
Yes, we are.
We're totally being called to do that. Yeah. And, so going into even some more history, which brings us up to the Civil War and the keeping this country together. So one of the things that's going on today is, you know, this people protesting and there's been statues and stuff taken down and tossed and written on and whatever. There's been
That hurts me because I love history, you know?
Yes, it hurts me too. I mean, but when I was doing this research, say even on the Founding Fathers, and I was reading and I was like, oh gosh, no wonder that's happening.
Right.
But I also want to touch on like the rebel nature and how like Lincoln kept this country together, because part of the sacred contract of this country is to bring freedom and independence, mm-hmm. not just to us living here in our development and our evolution as a country and as citizens of this country, but it also brings it to the global community because this wasn't something that existed prior to this country. All right. None of this existed. You know, like there was, for us to start shutting down slavery, nobody else was doing that. Slavery didn't stop. You know, like we stopped
in Europe or in the Caribbean.
Yeah. We stopped the Atlantic slavery trade, you know, shipping African men and women here to this country. We stopped that.
Like the United States is always the first one to put a stop to things, right?
To things concerning freedom. That's part of our sacred contract.
Right.
Freedom and liberty for human beings.
That I totally agree. Yeah.
But what's interesting is we have these archetypes that are ingrained in us and in this country, and the rebel being one of them. And we can see the African American becoming rebellious and wanting freedom, you know, because they're reading. I mean, they're learning how to read and write and stuff. And so they're starting to like say, hey, wait a minute. Like, that's for me too.
Right.
And so there was all these uprisings. And then what had happened is, once Lincoln got into office, there was a lot of stuff going on. I touched on it with, you know, like this potential war with France and, right. and with, you know, like our foreign affairs were affecting our home affairs. So, you know, we're trying to be out on the global marketplace, right. But we have issues going on within our country and trying to keep it together, trying to keep the economy going here. And we still have these problems today.
Trying to pay our debt to France.
Yeah. Well, there was a group of states that wanted to break away from the country and leave the country when Abraham Lincoln got into office. And I think it was because they knew Abraham Lincoln was against slavery.
Right.
All right. So this brought up, I guess there was a battle. Well, actually there was some soldiers someplace in the South, in South Carolina, that were in a fort, Fort Sumter.
Okay.
And they hadn't had any provisions. They had no food. They were starving.
Oh my gosh.
And so Lincoln agonized and he was like, do I send food? What do I do? You know, like it's first few days in the White House. He's like, he doesn't know who's on his side, who isn't on his side. He inherited this all from, I think, Buchanan or something.
Wow.
And so he is like, okay, he finally decides to send provisions to those Union soldiers. Uh-huh. and apparently the Confederates, I don't know, must have intercepted. There was shots and there was a bloody battle and the Confederates took over Fort Sumter. So this was the start of the Civil War. It went on for 4 years of President Lincoln's term. He wanted it obviously to end. Everybody did. They were worn out. There was so much bloodshed, probably the most bloodshed in any war of Americans.
Wow.
Fighting each other's brothers, cousins, whatever, fighting each other. I don't know if you have any, you know, I know, like, I think there was somebody in my family that was a Confederate soldier because my grandma, I don't know what the history is of it.
Wow.
I can remember as a kid, my grandmother had, they were stolen actually, had, Confederate, like, pins, you know, like if you were a general or something, I don't know, you know,
right.
Was in it. But they had like all the, you know, the stars and whatever. And she also had a lot of Confederate money
because
they printed their
That's
own money, you know, they printed their own money. And because they were going to create their own country because now you have, and this is the shadow rebel who is fighting. And this is a ferocious archetype when it's protecting or in survival mode. So you have these Confederate rebels saying, you know what, we want to break away from the Union, the new formed United States of America, and we're fighting for our land. So that was kind of like the same thing. It was like the flip of the coin, what we fought for, you know, like what Americans fought for to get away from good old King George.
Right, exactly.
I'm like, wow, you know, like they were fighting for their land. It's like the same thing happening, only this is the shadow side of it because they still want to keep these people enslaved. So to me, that's like, you know, it was disrupting what their beliefs were and what they felt was, you know, what they were raised with, I guess, their beliefs about humans who were subhumans, because that's how they treated them. And that's basically what they would teach, you know, white people would teach their own kids growing up. They have these whole,
going
I know, I'm like, oh
and
my
that
God.
Has to stop because that's totally inappropriate. It's horrible.
There's
it's
these,
hate.
They
but
have
it's
these,
hate.
Yes, it's teaching
hate.
Your kids hate.
It's and, hate. And we can't have hate. Hate is not, hate is not.
But there are still like these people that still want to teach that. They still want
but
to
that,
teach that.
We have to change that on a macro level because it's going to take a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like the leadership style of Abraham Lincoln, because he, when he got into office, like you were talking about Fort Sumter.
Yeah.
You know, there were some states that still had slavery, and he didn't want to, you know, he had to make that decision. You know, do I go into North Carolina and help them? Because, you know, South Carolina and help them.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was, he's got a lot of great lessons for us. And maybe, you know, some of the leaders today need to go in and see, you know, how he was able to navigate.
Yeah.
Because he, you know, he had a big, big charge when he became president.
Yeah.
I know that one of the greatest speeches of all time is when he did the Gettysburg Address.
Well, that was after one of the major battles. And,
exactly.
And shortly after that, the war ended. But
it's been a battle and all the bloodshed. Come on, you know, it's like how many lives have had to be lost?
Yeah.
And for what? You know, it's like we need to take a step back. And is power that important to people? I mean, I think
that kind of power, you know, like
it's
really
horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible, but look at what COVID's done. It's just here and it's not going away. There's no vaccine. So it is a type of war.
Yeah.
It's a war that I don't know how long it's going to be and when it's going to end. But it's just, you know, we just have to start putting out, like Shelley says, you know, our head and our heart together and trying to make sense of what's happened so we can atone, we can integrate, and we can move forward with what needs to be done in this country.
Well, education is important, like you've been saying.
And, oh my gosh. You know, it's like, it's a level playing field, you know, and that's, you know, you touched on my nerve. Okay. So I need to rant.
Yeah.
But to me, teachers are not paid their worth, because everybody's life has been touched by a teacher. I don't care what you do in this world. A teacher touched your soul.
Yeah.
And if we really want to help and level the playing field across all economic levels, across all racial levels, it's education. Sure. We have to get great teachers. And, you know, I know we're going to have a show on education, so I'm going to save my rah-rah for that show.
Right, exactly.
I have some riveting information that's going to put everybody's hair on end.
Oh, I can't even believe it. When you told me, I was like, whoa.
Isn't that horrendous and disgusting? But it's part of what is happening.
Still goes on. Still,
and it has to stop.
This whole dynamic that is such a... All the seven deadly sins are wrapped up in this whole slave master kind of thing.
It's unraveling.
And it's unraveling. Thankfully, it's unraveling. And hopefully we see more of it unravel, and the truth of how the nation was birthed, how we, you know, work in the economic global field, like the whole, like, you know, how we interact even with other countries. And what is it that we're so afraid of? Why can't we? I mean, one of the great things about this country is we've always liked to share. Like, you know, we'll be like, you have we talked about it in the last episode, the entrepreneur philanthropist. We are, and then the pioneer, we come up with great ideas. We can solve things. There's so many, and they're squelched. That's the thing. We have all these kids that are coming up, you know, that might have these brilliant ideas to solve so many problems, and we squelch them.
Why? Entrepreneurship should be taught in schools, and it's not. It should be part of the curriculum.
Absolutely.
Because we need to teach our kids to be entrepreneurs, whether they go into that field or not.
Yeah.
It's important.
Yeah.
Fiscal responsibility isn't taught in schools. You got me going, girl.
Yeah. And then, I mean, there's just so much. Repeating patterns that need to stop being repeated.
Totally.
And we have to hold our government now accountable to what we originally started with, and just, you know, and kind of almost like, okay, what's all this bullshit crap that got thrown in there that really does not serve the human soul?
Well, here's in a skinny sense of the way it trickles down to your local level, to your school boards, your local level, your state. and the feds. And it's, you know, how are people working together? Because I know that we're fragmented right now. Yeah. Every state has different things going on. And for so long that was happening in education. Then they came back. And like I said, I'm going to save a lot of info for that show. Yeah, but yeah. Boy, do I think it's going to be a two-part show because I have so much to share. Oh, but the thing is this, we just need to stop blaming people. We need to start taking action.
Yep.
And to me, I really believe in freedom because I came from a repressed communist country that you couldn't speak because you were killed. My dad was taken to jail and thank God he wasn't killed, but his friends were. Yeah. He was able to donate. It was an act of God how he was able to get out. And when we came to this country, again, he was taken from the line that we were standing in because they had to search us before we were able to leave. And he dodged another bullet. But the thing is this, we have to see who's in office. We have to vote and you can't be complacent. And I had this discussion with one of my neighbors because right now, because of COVID, people want to put in, you know, their vote in the mail. And maybe because I live in Miami and I'm Cuban, I'm like, hell no, I'm going in person. I want to make sure my vote counts. And you have to see who you're voting for. Because people have to have integrity and they have to have transparency.
Well, it's all about like looking at the integrity that people have, but the virtues that they have and how they live their life. And you can't just go willy-nilly and vote for somebody because, oh, well, you know, he's going to upset the whole like political realm because right now there's no Republican or Democrat, you know, that is, I'm tired of them. I'm just tired of them.
I vote for the person.
You know,
I don't vote for the party. That's my personal feelings.
Yeah. I agree. But right. Having that kind of mentality though, right. When you go and vote, you have to educate yourself.
You have to, you can't just go on there and go eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Yeah, and then look at the long term of what, to me, I'm thinking now as I look at these things, is the long term is like, what does this person really stand for? And does it stand for, you know, corporate growth or, you know, just to avoid taxes? Or are they for equality across all boards, like the small businessmen, which, you know, or the business woman, or, you know, is it equal growth for all people as well as on an international level? You have to look at things on a bigger, much bigger perspective. And I think Abraham Lincoln did that.
Right.
When he, that was the whole thing with that, is to keep this country together, because believe me, this country could have fallen apart
totally.
So easily within those 4 years. It was a real test. And his speech was super important.
Oh my gosh.
It rallied because all the union guys, they're just fighting for like a belief, like freedom, or, you know, they were just fighting for a belief. It wasn't for their land. It wasn't for anything more than the belief to keep this country together. And that's a tough sell sometimes, as opposed to these rebels that were fighting for their land and their way of life. That's a completely different ball game. It's almost like good against evil, but, you know, will you stay there and actually fight the good fight just for an ideological belief
right.
of freedom and independence? And right now we're dealing
with that. And that's a virtue. That's
it is a virtue. So we have to.
We don't have virtues anymore.
Yeah, we have to teach our kids these virtues in school.
We don't have virtues. We don't have that sense of patriotism. We don't have that sense of pride of being an American. You know, I remember when I used to go to Europe when I was a teenager, and, you know, you'd go there and you'd feel such pride because you were an American. Everybody wants that American passport. You know, it gets me crazy. And then people just, don't get me going again. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. I can't help it. It's okay.
But it's true.
Hot,
you know,
it's a really hot subject of when we talk about the sins of America and these ways that certain educated people manipulated and manipulated laws or whatever, or had to like balance things to keep a country together. Like for Abraham Lincoln, after he did, this was fascinating. I just found this out today, is after he had signed and spoke the Gettysburg Address at this battlefield after all these Americans died. Okay. He's speaking about, you know, the emancipation of, you know, blacks, but then also to keep this country together.
Right.
And, but like a couple days after that, he signed for the execution of 38 Dakota Indian men.
You're kidding. Why?
No. It was the largest execution ever in the history of America. You don't hear about this one too much, but this is what this president had to deal with. He didn't come in. I'm sure this was against his, but it was the law at the time.
Wow.
Supposedly, there's two stories, one from a Native American, their side, and then one from the other side.
Uh-huh.
And what apparently happened, they said, you know, these men were uprising against the military or whatever it was, you know, in that area. And this I don't know how to say it, Tecumseh Ghost Horse, who knew the story, I guess he's like a guy today. He was telling this announcer or show at a law firm. He was telling him the story of what actually happened. And he said, no, what really happened is these people were starving. These Indians were starving.
Oh no.
And one man was accused by a farmer for stealing a cow.
Oh no.
And they stole the cow and it fed this tribe.
Right.
All right. And so when he was accused, the guy who was the farmer wanted justice, and this is so painful. He said to this is the Indian that did it, but then all of the other, 38 Dakota Indian men, they don't even put Indian men, they just put Dakota men. They all stood with their tribesmen and said, if you hang him, you hang us all, because they all hung. That's not the story that's told. This was a story that was years later by an Indian man, an indigenous man. He told the story of, this is what happened to my tribal, you know, ancestors. And apparently Lincoln, who's looking at the law, this is the law now, is looking at the law. The Indians had one law. Okay. They had their law.
Right.
They stuck together. They stuck together as a tribe. I mean, that story just like rips your heart out, because it was more honorable.
They were
this is survival archetypes.
Loyalty.
And this is being taken away from them, the right to have food. They were starving. And this is all across the country. This happened. And they're starving. And, you know, and you're there and you're like, and then I'm sure President Lincoln agonized about this issue. And because of the law, whatever the judge was that passed the sentence, well, if this guy's going to get hanged, you're all going to get hanged.
Oh my God.
They probably said, okay, well, I'm not going to pass this. I'm going to send it up the ranks, up to the head exec, and say, you're going to make the decision on this. And he was a lawyer himself and probably couldn't find any way
to get
around that in our law here in this country, the way it's set up. He probably couldn't. I don't know what the whole story was and what Lincoln had to deal with, but I do trust that in the things that he contended with during the Civil War and what he wrote in the Gettysburg Address, you know, he's trying to save a country and what it was all about. But then yet he has to go and see the hypocrisy, and then even his own signature and sign for the death of these 38 men. And they were all executed and hung.
Wow.
And who knows what story he got, though, too.
It's mind-blowing.
He probably got a one-sided story. and didn't get the story of, of.
Do you think he had the judge archetype?
Yes, he was a lawyer, of course. Yeah, absolutely. And probably a mystic too.
I think he was a mystic.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And he self-educated himself.
He was a really brilliant man.
Yeah. And
leaders
for anybody,
today use his leadership style in some. Yeah.
And for anybody that was like, who likes MMA, he was a wrestler too.
He was? You're kidding.
He was wicked into that. He had a very competitive edge.
Oh my gosh. He was so tall and skinny.
Yeah, I know. I guess he was pretty good too, apparently.
Wow. Yeah. I never would have thought that about Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Interesting, huh?
I know. So anyways, because of him, we got the, you know, the 13th Amendment, you know, put in. Right. And then there was a ratification or whatever, the 14th Amendment, because supposedly this is how the judge comes up. It's like you have this, you know, people looking at trying to create laws, and you have all these different opinions and people struggling to keep their
it's about power, the five-letter word.
Their power.
Yeah.
You know, Thomas Jefferson had said something. Oh, God, that quote.
They wanted to keep their hands on it. People don't want change. And why do you think that is? Yeah. Because, and we talk about power, is empowering others doesn't mean that you take your power away from yourself. Right. You bring it up even more.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a huge lesson that we need to just get out there. I'm telling you, I don't know how we're going to do it, but.
Me either. I don't know either.
Yeah.
I don't know what I did with it, but I had this quote from Thomas Jefferson. I don't know. Do you have it anywhere, Shelley? I don't know what I did with it. It was amazing. It was a great way to actually, oh, here it is. I have it.
Okay.
This is something, some food for thought. Like Thomas Jefferson, you know, one of the founding fathers of this country who wrote basically the Constitution, helped with the Bill of Rights, you know, like, and helped create this country. He referred, and he had slaves, referred to slavery as a necessary evil. So he knew this is the struggle that went on in our founding fathers, mothers, even to minds, is as it is, we have a wolf by the ear, and we can neither hold him nor safely let him go. Justice is in one scale and self-preservation in the other.
Oh my God.
Once again, we get back to those surviving archetypal forces that we are so hung up on, and that we want to constantly talk about the child, the saboteur, the victim, and the prostitute, which can be brutal for us.
If you don't know how to manage their energy, because if you don't identify them, and that's what Shelley and I are putting together, some mind-blowing stuff for you guys in the future, in the near future. If you don't understand how to navigate their energies, it could be devastating. And it shows up in all different kinds of different ways, like addiction and just everything.
Yeah.
Everything. So yeah. I could just imagine.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
That's horrible. A necessary evil.
And he's kind of a funny guy. Like, I mean, like his whole thing with, say, the Native American Indians and even George Washington, they and who was it? Theodore Roosevelt. They did some horrendous things toward the Native American Indian along the way. You know, it wasn't just these founding fathers had their flaws. We all have flaws.
Right.
And we're trying to navigate through our lives. But as we, as Americans now, as we move into our future, you know, we have this fate or destiny, and we have choices that we can make along the way, which is the topic of our next episode, learning the sacred contract of America. Is like, where are we going to take all this? And where are we going to take this, you know, these four survival archetypes, contending with them, but also these archetypes that are based in the earth, based
the roots
in our bones, based in our roots of our country, that the rebel, the pioneer, the mother, the entrepreneur, the mystic, the visionary, the slave master, and the judge. We are influenced by those as we live in this country. And they permeate in this. I always thought I had a rebel, but it's not one of my, my individual own. I have eight others, but right. I feel that one in me. When freedom and independence, right. I get outraged when I read this stuff.
Oh, it's horrible.
I get like, I just can't even. And
same well, I think with, my revolutionary turned into the rebel because I was born during a revolution.
Yeah.
I've lived in this country my entire life.
Yeah.
So you take on that essence of that archetype. Because
and and I've taken on the essence of a pioneer in women's mixed martial arts to help women become more equal in the playing field of a sport because they weren't even considered until in the last 10 to 15 years. They weren't even considered to be able to play or to be in mixed martial arts. So that pioneer aspect, that has infiltrated my system. That's part of this country. Also, the mother, naturally. I think I want to get connected more with the Mother Earth. And I can identify that, which I think all females can. Maybe the males need to a little bit. I can identify with the father big time. I've gone
We love mothering other people.
You know,
and being mothered is so important because so many people haven't been mothered correctly or haven't had that mother essence in their life where they just feel nurtured and secure.
Absolutely. And it's such an important one. It's such an important one. And then I already said the pioneer, the entrepreneur, definitely. I mean,
the entrepreneur is part of this country. And I really feel passionate about being it taught in schools.
Yeah. And the philanthropist about giving back. This is one thing about this country, giving back. The mystic is more of the spiritual aspect and tapping into what is God. And when I say God, I mean the feminine and masculine energies, tapping into both of those and having a deep, wise understanding and bringing in grace into this country, into yourself, into your family environments, into your workplace, the visionary, and then the slave master, which we've discussed pretty much at length. But the whole thing about the slave, to take it to that cosmic level, is to surrender your will
to God.
To God.
And to whoever you believe in.
And the funny thing about it is when Carolyn teaches the slave, she teaches it as the highest archetype to have.
It is.
And so this is a little mind blowing for people. How can the slave be, you know, the highest? It's all about surrendering to a higher purpose. And that's how the African American actually survived all the torment through all these years of, you know, is their beliefs in a higher power and family is what kept them and got them through, you know, these
horrible times,
horrible, horrific times.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and then the judge is, you know, what law are we going to be governed by? And sometimes these man-made laws.
Well, they're skewed.
They're skewed. And we really have to look at them. Same with religious, you know, beliefs, stuff like that, which should be taken out of the government realm for sure. And instead bringing, you know, God back into the schools and stuff. I mean, that's where we need to go. So I don't know. How do you want to end the show today?
It's been a really interesting and very thought provoking show. And that's what Shelley and I wanted to, for all of you.
Yeah.
And maybe just with a question, you know, how are you going to be the change agent in your life because it's going to affect the lives of many others.
Yeah.
We've got to start with ourselves.
Yeah.
We have to start with ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's really good. And maybe even to try to identify maybe one of those eight archetypes that we have been talking about. And see how that plays out. You know, does it come up for you? You know, do you gravitate? Do you feel it in your bones being maybe an American, or maybe you're attracted to America as a country, or maybe you live outside the country and you're listening to us and you're wondering, yeah, I feel that. I feel that in my own country, or
right.
or whatever. I feel, you know, one of these eight archetypes, and how does it play out? You know, looking at the light or the shadow sides, as well as the four core. You know, find those. And if you can't find them now, we're going to help you find them.
Oh, we've got a boatload of stuff to help you connect with yourselves and.
Yeah.
You'll find your archetypes. Absolutely. Can't wait for that one.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah.
So, in our next show, which is part three of this series on the Sacred Contract of America, we're going to get into the fate and destiny of America and what it means for citizens of this country today. So that's going to be a great, fun episode.
Yes, it is.
Very, very, hopefully mind-blowing. And... You know, to get you to think and feel now.
There you go. And transforming, mind-blowing and transforming.
Exactly. Exactly. So we'd like to thank you for joining us on part two of the series on the Sacred Contract of America, the original, the Sin of America. And, you know, if you enjoy the show, please go ahead and leave a review, because it definitely helps people find the show. And also mention how we might have inspired or motivated you in some way. Or if you have a question, please ask a question, because we'd like to hear from you. And then never miss an episode of Evolve 360 by remembering to subscribe or download on iTunes, or you can go to right to YouTube. And then everything is on our site. You can find it at evolve360show.com. This is
Shelly Grace.
And Shelly Devine with Life Unplugged. Today raw. Was really raw and real.
Very raw, but we want to get right. raw.
Right. right. So we'll see you on the next Evolve 360 Shelly Shell Show. And thanks so much for listening.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You guys have a great time. Bye.